Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting lifestyle are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, it's Friday. How's your week been so far?
Been a great week. You know, we always talk about wins during the week, and I think that this week was a great week for some of the wins that we had in our company. And I also want to add, just give everyone a little bit of a heads up, another year of the Great Cycle Challenge is just ahead. So that's going to be in August. I've already signed up again. So we'll be promoting that over the next little while. You'll probably see lots of posts about it and any help with the Sick Kids Hospital. That's the cause. So any help would be greatly appreciated.
Wonderful. You know what? It's always a fun event. And Karen does such a great job of, Karen, by the way, does all of our marketing and is an outstanding marketing person on our team. And she takes such great photos of Al every year and shares those. So you will see those on our social channel. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk about that probably a few more times before the month is up. So, well, I'm excited too. And talk about wins, and people will likely get tired of me saying this. I hope not. But one of the great surprises with the podcast was we get to meet really, really great people. And I've said for a long time, really good people know other really good people. And our guest today, we got introduced to, and again, great person. We had such a great first call. And we said immediately within the first 2 minutes of chatting that we knew we were going to record together. So joining us today is Stephen Shedletsky, also known as Shed. Shed is the author of Speak Up Culture. When leaders truly listen, people step up. He is also a leadership and culture speaker and coach and advisor. Welcome to the show, Shed.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. A joy to be here with you.
Well, Shed, you've written a book that I referenced in the intro, and I want to dive into it. So can you tell us a little bit about the book? But I also want to know, why did you end up writing it? Like, why now?
So by the time I finished the book, I leaned into a quote that has become a recent favorite. It's from our favorite Danish theologian, everyone together now, 3, 2, 1, Soren Kierkegaard, of course. And Kierkegaard says that life makes sense looking backwards, but it must be lived forwards. And so this interview question of where do you see yourself in 5 years, it's not necessarily the answer we're looking for. It's the thought process that I think gives the most value. And so the last chapter of the book is called It's Personal. And the book for me, I think definitely was personal, sort of semi-autobiographical, as well as I think everyone's leadership ought to be personal. You know, what are those experiences in your life that give you meaning? And what do you want to help advance and solve for, not just for yourself, but for others? And so I wrote the book for two main reasons, and maybe three. One, I grew up with a stutter, so I know what it feels like to be voiceless. I married a speech therapist, good choice. More so for my kids and nieces and nephews than me, it is a hereditary thing. But I knew intimately and know intimately that feeling of voicelessness. Here's what's interesting, though. You don't need to have a stutter or a speech impediment to feel voiceless. I think at any one given point in time, we've all felt voiceless in a job, in a relationship. And so I want to help solve for that, because when we use our voice, we can contribute our genius, and particularly when it feels safe and worth it to use our voice. And then in my near 20-year career, I've seen, especially in client services, as well as being on teams, the difference of having a speak-up culture and not having a speak-up culture. And so I want to contribute to a world where there's more organizations and leaders who actually lead. I want to contribute to a world where when my kids get their first job, they work with a leader and not for a driver.
Well, we definitely want to explore more of this topic, but That is not something you shared on our first call, that you grew up with a stutter. So
apologies, I left that detail out.
Well, no, but it's interesting because it reminds me of an exercise that we went through this week. And we're working with somebody who's a podcast guest from the Mental Gym, and that's Corey Chadwick. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're working on with Corey, and I really enjoy, is we're taking an hour every week and we're stopping and we're putting everything away. And he's challenging us with questions. And one of the things that came up on Tuesday was, what are the kind of self-limiting beliefs that you have? And one of the things I brought up, he said, well, where does that come from? And how has that impacted? And I went away and I thought about it and I thought, I don't even know where some of these come from. It happened in youth and then that just became the norm. And there are still things that I find challenging. And I know from doing, you know, 200 of these episodes now, I know there are a lot of people in leadership positions who struggle with things either real or unreal. So I'd love you to go back in time to that stutter and maybe talk about, share a little bit about how did that affect you, how you got over that, and how it shaped who you became in your career and what you ended up doing.
Yes. So one hat to Corey Chadwick, because it was Corey who introduced us, and Corey's a dear friend.
That's right.
And I have so much time, space, and love for that beautiful human being and gentleman. So you make me think of so much, which is so great. So I'll definitely talk about sort of my story in some pieces, but there's two sort of content pieces that come to mind from what you just shared, Robin. One is the interplay of the attributes of openness or open-mindedness and curiosity. I think we get into trouble as human beings, especially leaders, first and foremost, if we aren't open-minded. If we're closed-minded, that's a problem. If we're closed-minded, it means that we're not willing to think again. We're not willing to entertain that there might be more truth beyond our own perceived truth, right? If we have open-mindedness, that's okay. Open-mindedness plus curiosity, ooh, that's really cool. The difference between open-mindedness and curiosity is that open-mindedness is passive and curiosity is active. So let's say I'm from out of town and I visit you guys and you say, hey, can we take you to the most authentic Toronto restaurant or area of the town? If I go, yeah, sounds great, I'm open-minded. But if I get off the plane and show up, even though I'm from the GTA as well, and I actively seek out, take me to the most Torontonian place ever, that's curiosity. We can solve for low curiosity with open-mindedness. We get into trouble if we're closed-minded, especially if we're closed-minded and curious. If we're closed-minded and curious, we become very actively, we embark to ensure that our perspective is the right perspective. And this is how we get conspiracy theory. The other thing is we need to embrace truth tellers in our organizations and in our leadership. And so to answer your question head on, I spent the first, 21 years of my life hating public speaking, not wanting to be up in front of people. And there were a few sort of pivotal moments. I first realized I had a stutter in grade 2. I was given a therapy. I was given a clicker to count the number of times that I stuttered in a day, to like chart a negative correlation or something. It didn't work because I was counting the negative behavior. And as soon as I took it out for the first recess at 10:15 in grade 2, and I clicked because I stuttered, one of my schoolmates was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. And I put it away and it never came out again, right? And so I successfully did nothing for the next 4 years. And it was in grade 6 French class where I had to read a passage out in front of the entire class where I couldn't pronounce the word très. Now, for you and I and anyone who speaks French or is Canadian, you know that très is like the third frickin' word you learn in French, right? But it's a harsh sounding word. I couldn't pronounce it. It's probably one of the most embarrassing experiences of my life. But I knew after that I needed to go get help. I went home that day. I said to my mom, this is what happened. Let's go get help. I enrolled, with the help of my mom advocating for me, I enrolled in something called the Speech and Stuttering Institute, which is still around to this day. Amazing organization that does great work. And I went to a stutter camp that summer and worked on it and got tools and strategies, and even better, was serving. You know, as a 13-year-old kid, I was the second youngest. There was a 14-year-old from Ottawa, and then everyone else was a young adult in their late teens or 20s. And my stutter wasn't as bad as some others, which gave me a little bit of survivor or stutter's guilt. I'm not sure what it was, but I became focused on how can I help others? And so I formed a really great friendship with like a 25, 26 year old guy who was twice my age, but we had like a big brother, little brother thing going, and we traded crib notes. And I felt that we were helping each other with our own impediments, which was fantastic. And then I just kept putting myself, Robin and Al, in modest, reasonable tests. I said yes to performing in the play at summer camp next summer. I said yes, or maybe I wasn't given a choice, to go and do an announcement in front of the entire summer camp, and stuttered and didn't die. I just kept doing little things. And then the real shift was in my last year of undergrad at Western at Ivy. I enrolled in a presentation skills class, and my brilliant professor, a guy by the name of Dennis Shackle, a Kiwi from New Zealand, he played Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and he said, next class, come back and share a speech with as much, if not more, passion than Dr. King, which is no small request. And I knew the only thing that I could speak to with as much passion was the work to overcome my fear of public speaking. And I gave a 5-minute talk on this, on not being able to say très, on the universal Jerry Seinfeld joke that the number one fear in North America is public speaking and number two is death. So you'd rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. So it was, yeah, that's sort of been my experience. And then the first time I spoke to serve, it wasn't about me. It was about helping others overcome their impediments or fears. That was when I was like, I really want to do this. That was when I felt fulfilled.
That's a great story. I'm glad you shared that. And I'm glad Robin asked about it. And I could dive down into that and ask a bunch of questions. I'm going to ask one really, hopefully, quick question, but I want to get back to the speak up culture. But you said you did that all at 13. That's a pretty brave decision for any 13-year-old kid. Like, I think a lot of kids at that age would just, they'd try to just avoid it and push it and hope it goes away. What do you think was it about you at 13 that made you choose that path?
Well, in my religion, when you hit 13, you're a man. So I guess I had to behave like one. I think a couple of things. One, I had 4 years of this festering. You know, one of the things with a stutter is it gets worse once you know you have one. Because then the psychological insecurity piece of it ramps up. So not only is it now physiological, it's now in your awareness and it can actually make it worse. So I was festering with this thing for 4 years. And then when I had sort of this climactic failure, for some reason, A, I had a great relationship and still do with my mom and my parents. And so I felt comfortable sharing struggles with her and them. And whether it was a knowing or whatever it was, I just knew that if I didn't deal with this, it was going to get in the way of my future and my success. I just knew it.
Yeah.
So that's what prompted the, let's go get help on this, because it was getting in the way.
One of the things I love about this podcast is you hear so many people's different stories about some of the things they've had to overcome. And we've had an array of people on here that have talked about the challenges they faced, either, you know, growing up or as an entrepreneur or at some point. And it gives you a different perspective, and one that if you don't have to live through it, it's something that you don't even think about, right? But then hearing you talk about it, it puts it in perspective a lot more. I want to jump back, though, to the speak up culture. Like, can you talk a little bit more about that? It's what your book's about. And I'm going to butcher the phrase that you use, but you talked about, you know, it's better to work for a leader in a speak up culture than a, and use the word driver in there, you know, a leader that's not listening to you. Like, talk a little bit about that. And again, you're going to say it far more eloquently than I can, but talk a little bit about what it is, the speak up culture, and why it's important.
So a speak up culture is an environment in which it feels both safe and worth it to speak up with ideas, even if they're half baked, to make the firm operate better or to make a relationship better, to share feedback, to help one another grow. The purpose of feedback is in the first four letters, feed. It's not called knock down back. It's called feedback. And our feedback is but opinion. It's not fact, but it's designed to help a relationship and one another grow. To share concerns before they become ethical issues or safety issues or things that get in the way of our success. To disagree. The true tell sign of a speak up culture is that we can debate and disagree well. And it's a true meritocracy where the best ideas prevail. And it's not an attack on people. It's an attack on ideas. And finally, we can admit mistake. We can say, that's on me. And we do so knowing that the result of that will be improvement. There might still be need for accountability, but it's improvement. And so that's what a speak up culture is. Why it matters is organizations that do have a speak up culture simply operate better. there's greater creativity, greater innovation, greater trust, greater cooperation, all of the things that we want to look for of what makes great organizations thrive and run, a speak up culture is the foundation. The thesis of the book is a 2x2 matrix, which is a speak up culture is when it both feels psychologically safe and worth it. There's a high positive perception of impact. When it feels safe and worth it, we speak up, even if there's fear. The goal is not fearlessness. The goal is to feel the fear, use it as data, and then choose to pursue in whatever way makes the most sense. That's sort of speak up culture as a whole. And the thing I said is, I want me, you, and my kids, everyone, to work with a leader, not for a driver. A driver may have the title, but they view their organization as if it's a machine. And there are cogs in a wheel that are meant to be pushed, driven, moved in whatever way you want to get what you want. And there are folks who are in positions of leadership who show up as drivers and not leaders. Leaders view and treat their organizations as what they are, a living and breathing organism, and they treat it as such. And they see that their opportunity is to help the people in their surroundings thrive, grow, even if it means they outgrow a role or they should move teams, departments, or organizations altogether. That's leadership.
That makes a lot of sense. You've said a lot of things that, well, we try to incorporate in our business. I think we've gotten better at it over the years, but you said at the end there, and this is one thing that I've thought myself, if you see someone outgrow their position and it means that they've got to move on to find something better that they're going to be happier with and thrive, good for them. I mean, we hate to see you go, but good for you.
Yeah. And even to be on the offensive of that conversation. I mean, leadership in so many respects is seeing potential in folks before they might see it themselves. Mm-hmm. Imagine you work for a leader and the leader pulls you aside and says, we have to have an uncomfortable conversation. You're too good for the role that you're in and you might not know it yet, right?
Yep.
Let's talk about your future. We hope it's here, but it might not be, and that's okay. That breeds loyalty. Think about how many friends they're going to say, go work over here. They will make you better. And I think the employment contract used to be longevity. Mm-hmm. Like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it would be join a company and you'll be employed for,
work there for your life.
50 That's years right. and have yep. a pension. Like it or not, that is no longer the employment promise based on the version of capitalism that is pervasive today. I think there should be a new promise of employment and its growth. I think that should be the promise. I can't guarantee you'll work here for 35 years, but I guarantee you that if you show up, we will show up for you and you will leave better. That's our promise.
Well, Shed, just to build on Al's point, I mean, we don't call people who have left and moved on from us former employees. We call them alumni. And our most recent alumni, we had that conversation and he was very upset about leaving, but he had a great opportunity. And we said, you're not a former employee, you're an alumni now. And we felt really good because we were part of that growth and development. And it worked out extremely well. He's one of our suppliers now. We know we have someone we trust and like that'll go to bat for us. I mean, it's fantastic. So I love what we're talking about here. I think this is so important. I did want to just go back to something you said, because it's a term that I've heard so often with my clients in psychological safety. And we're talking also about speak up culture.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate the two?
So they aren't different. Psychological safety is a component. So when I first started writing the book, I thought I was rebranding psychological safety. As it turns out, I'm actually speaking about psychological safety plus. So I'm a big fan of the concept and the body of work, very much put on the map by a scholar, Amy Edmondson out of Harvard. Amy is brilliant. I love her work. I have deep respect for her as a professional and human being, but she herself admits not the best term. It doesn't really describe what it is. It is an academic term. So we take a real human experience and put what I feel like an academic lab coat on top of it. The definition of psychological safety and team psychological safety is an environment in which members of a team feel that it is safe to take interpersonal risk. Great. Foundational. The two elements of a speak up culture are, yes, does it feel safe to speak up? But the other piece is, does it feel worth it? Because it can feel safe to speak up, But how many times do you speak up, even if it feels safe and there's no change? After a while, apathy or futility is going to set in. So, you know, you guys go back many years, you have a close friendship. Let's say, Al, you see that Robin's doing something that's getting in his way, right? And you take the risk. You're like, Robin, I have such respect for you and I need to share this with you. I think this behavior is getting in your way. And Robin, you're like, oh my God, thank you so much. It's a great conversation. Wait 3 weeks, nothing changes. And you have the same conversation and nothing changes. Like, how many times do you go back to a dry well, even if it's really safe, before apathy sets in and you go, I just got to let them make their bed and sleep in it too, right? You will stop speaking up if you don't see any impact or any change. So a speak up culture is, it is psychologically safe and there's a perception of positive impact.
So Shed, like a lot of our clients, me, Al, and Joe, who you haven't met yet, and hopefully you get to meet him soon, are their business partner. We're trying to build a successful firm. We're trying to do everything we can to make it a great place to work for people to want to show up. If you're giving advice, whether it's to us or to our listeners, how do you build a speak up culture? What's the first step?
Yeah. So I have steps, but I also have, there's a mindset. And what's nice is I think you guys embody it. And that mindset is a mindset of humility. You first have to know that your perception as a leader is but one perception. It's one data point. The number of times I've spoken about this and then I've heard leaders go, oh yeah, we have that. And it's like, how do you know, right? Because if you feel you have it, A, as a leader, your whisper is a shout and your tiptoes are stomps, right? You have a disproportionate impact because of your influence. And B, as a leader, the more senior you get, you are at risk of getting further away from the truth. Why? Because we're biologically wired to offer our leaders deference. We could talk smack about a senior leader. They walk into the room. Hello, ma'am. Hello, sir. Lovely to see you. Can I hold your bag for you? Here's the door. It's biological. We are biologically wired to offer those who have power over us deference. And so first and foremost, you have to know that your point of view is but one data point. And the true test is how many data points are you getting to prove where you are. If you want to create a speak up culture, there's a virtuous cycle, two actions. One is encourage folks to speak up and use their voice. And then when they do, just as important, if not more important, is to reward them. Encourages, ask open-ended questions, use silence, tell on yourself, give yourself feedback first, and then say, team, how am I doing? Use polls, use assessments, like do everything you can to have people feel and know that their voice is welcomed and encouraged here. Now, when they take the bait and they speak up or they respond to a poll or they do anything, are they rewarded or are they repeatedly ignored or worse punished? And especially when they step into that speak up ring and they open up the strings and they step in and the pressure's on them and they speak up, especially when they bring bad news or something hard to hear or a disagreement, are they rewarded even if it stings, even if it hurts, even if it's inconvenient, even if it has us take two steps back when we want to take three steps forward? So those are the two. It's a cycle of encourage and reward, and it ripples because if someone speaks up and it goes well, guess what? They tell their friends and they wear it in their body language. And if someone speaks up and it doesn't go well, they tell their friends and they wear it in their body language.
Absolutely. I want to go back to something you said earlier about maybe having that uncomfortable conversation with someone and how important that is. And I just want to share this for our listeners, because I know there are listeners who are in the same boat as us, you know, a small company, you're growing, you're adding staff, you're doing these types of things. And for me, Al and Joe, we operated as three equal partners for the longest time. And then a couple of years ago, we said, well, we're going to give each other specific roles now. And because each role has difficult decisions to make. And I'll never forget Al and I driving to an appointment together. And he looks at me, he says, I got to have a bit of a difficult conversation with you. It turned out to be an awesome conversation because to your point, Shed, it was something I wasn't aware of. It was a blind spot. And I was actually happy that Al brought it to me because it allowed me to say, okay, that's something I didn't see. First of all, I was a little disappointed that I didn't see it, but it was something, I can address that and I can address that pretty easily. And we went on to have a great meeting and talked about it after. And so that difficult conversation And the reason why I'm saying this is I'm sure there are other people that maybe have a business partner, that maybe have an employee that they think they're avoiding this conversation. And just our experience has been, this has just allowed us to grow as people and grow as a company and make us all better. So I love that you touched on that.
Just to add to it is, how do you approach those conversations with, first and foremost, I care about you. I'm sharing this. It's not fact. It's opinion. It's a point of view. And I'm sharing this because I want dialogue and I want to help you grow. This is what I'm seeing or experiencing. What's your experience? Feedback conversations don't go as well, especially A, when there's a power dynamic. Mm. I had a senior leader that she gave me lots of feedback, but every time there was feedback, it was, what have I done to disappoint you lately? And there was no room for, can I share my experience as to why I'm struggling or why this is hard for me? There was none of that. It was just, this is what you're doing wrong, address it. And it's like, well, can we talk about this systemic issue here? Can we talk about the behaviors that you're doing, leader, that are getting in my way of showing up at my best? Want to go there? No, off the table. All right, great. I'll just keep punching myself in the face here. Like, come on. So I think when we approach these conversations as, we aren't right, we have an opinion and an experience, and we take the risk and exude care in having that conversation to invite someone else to share their point of view or experience, or go, oh my God, you're onto something. That really is hard to hear, but I want to address that. I want to work on that. And then we can actually support them in working on it.
You said something earlier that I immediately seized upon. And I think this time I won't butcher it. You said, as a leader, a whisper is a shout and your tiptoes are stomps. Did I get that pretty close?
Nailed it. Yeah.
Wonderful. See, because I cued into that one. So real questions. Number one, did you come up with that? Number two, can I steal it?
I came up with half of it. The first half, as a leader, your whisper is a shout, I heard from a colleague, Simon Sinek, and I added in, your tiptoes are stomps, because it's not just about what you say, it's also about what you do.
100%.
So wow. The first half, you have to pay royalty to Simon Sinek. The second half, you can use on my behalf.
Fair enough. Love it. Can you talk about, you said that you've devised a little bit of an equation for culture. So can you just tell us about that and share that with people who want to build on this for their company?
Yes. And I've even shared this equation with a mathematician and they said, yep, checks out. So that's pretty cool. So first and foremost, when I say culture, what do I mean by culture? Culture is very much in the how. It's in our behavior. It's how we behave, how we treat others, how we treat ourselves, how work gets done. That's culture, and it's a common shared experience of a group of people. And so the strength of a culture is determined by the clarity of its values and the clarity of its values in behavior multiplied by the behavior itself. And then all of that is raised to the power of influence. So culture equals, in brackets, values multiplied by behavior raised to the power of influence. So I'll unpack it a little bit more. So there is an organization which we all know well. Their values were communication, respect, integrity, and excellence. Excellence for me, Al, is my favorite, least favorite value. Why? I think it's meaningless. Like, Robin, do me a favor, more excellence for the rest of the day. I'll get right on that. Thanks very much. Like, what do I do? Right? If we define excellence as a verb or action phrase, I would say excellence could be do more of your best work. Ooh, like now we're talking. That means I should understand my strengths and amplify them. I should also understand my weaknesses and limitations, share both of those vulnerably with my team, work to safeguard on my weaknesses or limitations, delegate as appropriate. Like, that's five or six behaviors underneath excellence when we change it to do more of your best work, right? Those four values, by the way, respect, integrity, excellence, communication, they were the four values of Enron, which was a company known for its famous accounting scandal. So they had values, but they were meaningless, absolutely meaningless. They were on annual reports, screensavers in their walls, bravo, you know? So the true test of a culture is how clear are your values in behavior, and then are they behaved? Anything multiplied by zero is zero. If you have great values, but they aren't behaved, bravo. Worse, anything multiplied by a negative, if there's a gap between what you say and do, especially from senior folks or those who have a lot of influence, you can have a toxic or deleterious culture. Anything times a negative is a negative. And then all of it is raised to the power of influence, because a culture is strong when its values are clear and behaved. In our cultures, we get the behavior we reward as well as the behavior we tolerate and enable. And then it's raised to the power of influence, because the more influence one has in a culture, the more their individual values and behaviors bear weight. It means more, Robin, Al, and Joe, if you live the values as partners in a business and as those with a ton of influence, than it does someone who was hired into a junior role last week, unless one of you handpicked them. Then all of a sudden their behavior represents yours a little bit, like, you know, there's more influence. So yeah, that's the culture equation as I see it.
As someone who grew up in engineering, I love it.
Great. Show me the ring. It is approved. Very good. Yeah.
No, I don't have my ring, and I left that world behind me a long, long time ago, but
fair enough.
I can definitely appreciate that.
So he says, Shed, I see the engineer come out all the time, just so everybody knows.
Yeah. You can take the ring off, but you can't change the brain. Yeah.
That's right. Well, we've arrived to the portion of the podcast that is my absolute favorite, and we've asked this of almost 200 people now, and I would love, Al, to throw the question over to you, because it's a little more philosophical, and I just have a feeling that you have a great answer for this, and you've already talked about some of the things you're doing. So, Al, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, I look forward to it. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So, can you maybe talk about some of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Well, there's this anonymous hospital wing. No, I'm kidding. I mean, one, I feel so lucky. I mean, you know, I could croak over and pass this afternoon or get hit by a bus, but I'm 37, I think. So I feel as though I'm going to be doing this work for another 30, 40, 50 years. That said, I am looking to contribute toward a world in which folks realize and know that they have strengths and then use those strengths to contribute to something bigger than themselves. And that is fulfillment. When we use our strengths to contribute to a cause bigger than ourselves that we care about, bigger than profit, we feel fulfilled. And I want to help contribute toward a future where more and more folks feel that way and more folks feel as though they spend their working days amongst folks who help them reach what fulfills them, which is fulfillment in our potential. It's not like a bucket that, like, once you reach level 10, it's like, well, you're done. Like, it's infinite. Once you feel like you've reached the peak, you take a breath and you look at where's the next peak. So yeah, fulfillment and potential are my causes.
Well, I appreciate that, and appreciate you sharing that. And we mentioned earlier, our shout out to Corey, who introduced us to you. And you know what? He was talking about that this very week, some of the same things that you just said. So we've circled right back around. And thanks again, Corey, for this great introduction.
I think there's no wonder why Corey and I get along so well, is we share so many of the same values and vision, which is beautiful. Thanks, Al.
Well, you both prove that really good people know other really good people. So again, thank you very much. And thank you, Shed, for joining us today and sharing your journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have more questions about what we talked about here or what you're doing next?
Yes, I think at present I'm the only Stephen Shedletsky in the entire human race, if you could believe it. So all you handfuls of Shedletskys out there, please name your children wisely. But if you Google me, you will find me. I'm most active on LinkedIn. And if you'd like to learn more about my practice and the book, head over to speakupculture.com.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that does it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. As we've seen here today, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.